Mr. Wilmot, Reel 8. We're talking about the coming to the end of the first day at Goodwood, you'd gone forward to try and feed people with this soup, and you hadn't found anyone, basically.
Not any quantity. One or two. Odds of. I'd be better giving it to the Canadians than they were there. They were in column. The Canadians must have got a good view of the whole thing. They were actually in the Columbine factory complex.
And you came back to the glider field. Now, there was a...
I didn't stay the night at the glider field. That is the point, you see. Now, this brings again. The main echelon wasn't across the bridge. They were back in a monastery. It must be in Sellers Group, just outside, just on the other side of the bridge. And the main, away from the Goodwood, they were stationed in there. We all went back there afterwards. So I wasn't in the glider field the first night of Goodwood. I went back. I came back in the glider field the next morning after the air raid.
Right. So you'd gone through it and back to.
Yeah.
So what about the air raid? That was on the yeah. So that was the A echelon and the return tank.
Yes, that was right. Yeah, that's A1 as I call it. They were there, and of course survivors of everything. All the survivors were back.
And what state was it in when you got back? Because you weren't raided at all on your side of the river.
Well, at that time the casualties were Kenny Matheson was killed, other people I knew was killed, a bloke that worked with me was wounded, some of the money was... There were a lot of casualties there. But I disagree with the chap who wrote a book. There were slip trenches, because the slip trenches were there. They didn't have to dig slip trenches, because slip trenches were there all over the place. They were using them.
And what's the next thing you remember?
Being back in the that monastery place, where everybody was coming back to. I got a new doctor, the Captain Beamish, he gave up after he seen him. He went away. He just went to bits and pieces.
Really?
Yeah, Captain Beamish. We got a new medical officer that day. I forget his name. Read the book something or something. Beamish didn't last. He lasted to Goodwood.
He lost his nerve then?
Huh?
He lost his nerve, Captain Beamish.
It must have been terrible. When he was probably trained to save life and he couldn't do anything about half the things that were happening, you see.
And what's the next thing you remember then?
Well, in that monastery area, it was quite a nice village. And there was a lot of graves.
This monastery sounds like Ardennes Abbey. They were there from 22nd of...
After Goodwood. Yeah, well, I remember clearly being there. One of the things we do, there were loads of German graves in it. The Germans, they had special war plaques, you know, they were the kind of stick the stick in the ground. And loads of them were there. So they tried to bury them.
And you don't remember anything else about that? There was a second day at Goodwood, much smaller.
By that time, supplies were irrelevant. They were just, there was no need, and no point of going near them at all. I don't remember anything about that. That's Sir John Gilmore and Hutchison. They did your best to. The rest are all the way. And of course, Angus Clark, we started it and didn't finish it.
In what way? Sorry.
Robert Clark.
It's Robert, yeah, sorry. Yeah.
He started it but didn't finish it. I can't think of anybody else.
Now, what were you doing while you were at Ardennes Abbey? Surely the unit needed rebuilding there.
The problem with Ardennes Abbey was that it was. I recall everybody was convinced that we were going to be broken up. You know, there was to be, the fight in the world was to be disintegrated, collapsed. We had so many casualties.
How did you feel about that?
Terrible. I wasn't happy. That was probably one of the unhappy times of the whole situation. And there was a distinct feeling, at ground level, I mean, that we were not going to survive this at all. That a new regiment would come up and we would fill it up and this kind of stuff.
You'd be a draft.
Yeah, well, it would have been terrible. It would have been an absolute disaster for us. But it could have happened easily enough. Why it was decided to keep it, I don't know. Possibly because of Colonel Scott. I mean, the experience, and Gilmore, the experience that they people got on that day must have been invaluable. And that's what I feel. But I remember that quite well. Nothing else comes to my mind, in fact, until we made the big move round to the other side of the front. We made a great big move from that abbey. We made a move way along to the far end of the front to join up where the Americans were coming down the Sherburne Peninsula. That must be there.
So this is the advance which culminated in the rush to Amiens. But there was a lot of fighting at places like St. Martin, Des Bessars,
yeah.
Reculi and Vire, and you know, these other places.
Now, we supplied them.
Hang on, before Vire, do you remember the others first? I mean, what's the first thing you remember after that?
I remember we crossed over. Again, that was a great convoy, a great problem, crossing over behind the front lines, really, from outside Corn. To the other end of the thing.
Did that dislocate your supply lines as
no,
well?
No, it didn't at all. But it just was... And we didn't have any problems with that at all. But of course, remember, from supply lines point of view, there wasn't many miles between that and the sea. It was a very close area. It just seemed to work. I don't know why.
And then what happened when you got there?
Well, when we got along there, we were following the dance through the Bocage district. We had to supply them every night. Nothing was ever as bad again as Show. Show was the really terrible place. The casualties now were a couple of tanks or one tank, you know, and somebody killed. And we always brought up reinforcements, and we always had there. If it was just the tank was all right and people were killed, then we supplied staff. You see, we had staff to do it.
So, what was a typical day like for you? Well, starting in the morning, say, you know, just during this advancing. How would the morning start? Where would you sleep overnight for a start?
Beside my truck. Well, I had a 1500 weight as a driver. And we just slept beside it. No,
you wouldn't dig in?
No. And you know, you keep saying dig in. I never remember ever digging in. Isn't that funny? And yet I didn't. I would never remember it. I had a special German shovel. I quickly got one of these shovels at the German side, which, you know, you hooked it up and screwed it in, and you could dig away with it. I never mind having a shovel. The Germans had these ones for digging in themselves. I suppose I hope that they have them.
And so you'd get up. What time would you get up?
First light. It was all every hand at first light. There was no light then.
And what would you do first?
Feed everybody on the spot. The tanks looked after themselves because I always fed them in advance, you know. I mean, you would give them $3. Or $2 or $1. They were always... And remember, supplies were there was nobody counting what I got or anything else. I mean, it was like the rum issues. And that was another thing. Colonel Scott, I had to do rum issues.
I'll come to that. We're looking at a daily routine. So you'd issue the morning food to who?
Well, I mean, a cook sergeant would do all that. I would just make sure the cook sergeant had all that he needed. And he would make sure he had all he needed. I would just...
And this would be the food for the B echelon.
Absolutely. Yeah, it should look after itself as well. There'd be cooks all over the place.
And then, after you'd done your B echelon, people, what was your next duty in there?
Finding out what was happening, where the tanks were, what they were doing. Listen to this and listen to that. Nothing really great. Take something up, look about post coming in. There was still kick to be issued. There was no laundry facilities. Well, we issued another thing. We would get word about where the baths were, and we would organise groups to go and have showers, you know, and if possible get the echelons in front. The tanks, they were a thing apart. They just couldn't get till they came back. But we issued showers. There was bathing places we used to find. You know, you were told there'd be a shower unit at a certain place, and you'd done that, you could have a shower.
So that was more the showers, the mobile showers were what were you?
They brought them up and told us where they were, and I would organise gangs to go back and do that.
And anything else during the day?
Vehicles.
And then during the night, you'd go up.
By afternoon, you were getting ready. If the tanks were in action, of course. And they were in action. Well, you see the number of days out of reserve. We were in action every day. But then we had a supply problem at night. Had to be done every night. Up to them, supply them, and come back in the morning. And as I say, we never lost any money. And that money gave us a sense of security.
Now, what about the rum ration you were talking about?
We had that done on Colonel Scott Constructions, and we did it.
So it would only be on special occasions?
Well, we did it in Show someplace. So I definitely did it in Show. Definitely did it after duty. And we did it also at Bushy, you know, when we got further on. Colonel, which is a weird rubbish, you see. Well, I had the rubbish, and they were in gallon jars, as they said, and there was two in a box. Because I had the lorry, the fetching head lorry with staplers and everything, as you can well imagine. And I was usually sergeants would take over the issue, and they would all line up with their young lads when they wanted. Remember, we were a young squadron, and the old sergeants were making ham out of this, I can tell you. You know, he's this, so I'll drink that. They, anyway, I never got very much back, but I can tell you, it always disappeared.
And was there a problem stopping them from pilfering it from the lorry? I mean,
no, I didn't have, I must say, I can't consciously ever remember having any question of pilfering from the lorry or pilfering around. As I say, maybe because of the squadron we had, I don't know. But no, I had no trouble with that whatsoever. I certainly have to watch War Office control stores, always. War Office control stores. Binoculars were War Office control stores. Watches were War Office control stores. And revolvers were War Office control stores. So I had so many of these, and I had to keep an eye on these. Because I can tell you, when a tank got lost, and I was involved, because I had got involved in many of these, when a tank got lost, they'd come back and say to me, oh, 40, we what? We lost a watch, we lost the binoculars. We never ever didn't lose them, you see. And of course, I was supposed to get them. But Walton watches and binoculars disappeared when the crank went up. And in many cases they did. But I'm quite sure there was a few of them liberated, as Mr. Montgomery used to say. He liberated things himself. But that was it. Watches, and eventually we stopped putting watches in there or anything because we lost them anyway. And they were never needed to.
So, anything else about this period when you were moving forward? Any particular incidents?
They moved to the west, it would be, and they're coming down. The only thing that sticks in my mind clearly is the night the regiment got onto the hill at Bursey. They got onto Bursey Hill. That Bursey Hill, without looking at the map, was on the far side of the main Vere Vassy Road. Vere Vassy Road was being used and patrolled, and not controlled, but up and down went German half tracks. Up and down, whizzing down them, firing all over the place. It was a real, not a nice place to be. But the regiment got up onto the hill, and virtually were cut off. That didn't stop the fact that they still had to be supplied. So we had to get lined up. We lined up the convoy that night. Harry Melville was there. We lined up the convoy that night, and we had a tank came down from RHQ. I can't remember who it was, and he was to take us onto the Vere Vassy Road, up the Vere Vassy Road a wee bit, off the Vere Vassy Road, and up the hill to Bursey, you see. Well, we did that. Now, as it so happens, the nappy, I got a lot of nappy goods come through, and I took the nappy with me up to Vere Vassy, and of course I had extra cigarettes, chocolate, and all sorts of stuff, you see, which I took up. And by this time, the squadron was in a lager up in Vere Vassy, and of course, when I started getting involved with them, and being noisy, I remember Scott coming along and tearing a stick on me for all the bloody noise. He said, "Do you know the Germans are about 100 yards from us?" And I said, "No, I didn't know that." So he said, "Less noise." But anyway, I did that. I also sold the nappy on credit because nobody had any money, so I was selling stuff to people and getting paid for them after we got Vere Vassy back.
And did you actually come in under fire or under threat as you crossed the road? Because the road was patrolled by Germans, but not occupied all the time.
Right. It was a terrible place. No, we never ever got into any physical firing on the convoy that I did, ever. As I said, I don't know why, and we were just lucky. There were columns that were very badly shot up, but we didn't. But that was, I remember clearly, on Bursey Hill that night. We came back early in the morning again. That was always the worst time, really.
So that looks like it would be round about the time of 3rd of August to 4th of August.
Yeah. Well, that, from then, the thing became disjointed again. I can tell you why I remember. The valet's gap to me didn't mean very much. I just was told to supply vehicles with replacements. The Vere Vassy doesn't mean anything. The next thing I personally remember and think about is the crossing of the Seine. We crossed it in Vernon. I remember crossing the Seine in Vernon for two or three reasons. I don't know when that was, but it could be much after that.
And what do you remember of that?
Well, we were crossing they were building a bridge across the Seine. It was an island bridge, we didn't cross it. And all the other bridges had been blown up by the British Air Force, I suppose, to stop the supplies coming to the Germans. And we were in Normandy. So they built the bridge across there, and we were going across in the morning. I remember Grant Edgeworth to Grant, and I'm going to go forward and have a look at this, so that if there's any places I can take a shortcut, if there's any way I can help myself going forward, I'll do it. So I was down there looking at them building this bridge, and having a little snooty around, when I bumped into the colonel, who was down doing the same thing, and I got another ear ringing from him to get the hell out of here. Because he was down trying to get three fighting squadrons across. I was only worried about some vehicles later on in the night. However, we crossed them. The next thing I remember about crossing the bridge, we crossed it, and we come up to where I remember we lost a tank with five men at a place called Etrapania. It's not far away, not far away from the sea. It's at Vermin. And I remember I got up to that tank later on, and the five men were killed. Not in the tank, coming out of the tank, because the whole field, the whole area was covered with Germans, and they were all shot. We lost five people. And I don't remember ever losing a tank where we lost the entire crew. We lost two, we lost three maybe, but never five.
And that was a headquarters company tank?
No. For this time, you know, I was going up and down these lines, looking for things and getting generally involved, without actually firing a shot and anger, let me tell you. But I was about in there, you see, and it helped. And that was a shame. So that was up to Etrapania, heading on now towards the Dash.
That's the Dash.
I remember not much of it, other than we were dashing and the squadron was flying down. Petrol was needed every other minute, not every other minute.
How did you cope with that?
Well, RASC was doing most of the work. I was filling, trucks were going back hard and filling up with jerry cans, coming up and going up at night. And we were going up, finding tanks. There was no real orders. You found a tank which is stopped for petrol, he got jerry canned up, then you found another one. And the thing I remember now is we slept on the top of Billy Ridge one night. Going up, that was near Ireland, near the village is near. But we went up, and Billy Ridge was one of our places, and we slept on Billy Ridge. Amiens, I remember, slightly. I think Les Gibson was wounded at Amiens, but you find out after that. Was going on the road up, and it's right up, and then the next thing of any great thing was, of course, going into Antwerp. That was the Dasher.
So, I
can't remember any peculiars other than Billy Ridge, other than Etrapania, and
now, what about billets? You had to find, I mean, you know, that was part of your...
No, billets. There. No.
Nowhere on the way.
No billets. It's like where you are.
So no billets.
Nobody billets.
What about the entry into Antwerp, then?
What?
Entry into Antwerp. What do you remember that?
I remember clearly, I received up, I was again, I just left BSO, and I went up and down the road often, and it was no trouble to me. I was always certain where I was, and I went up that night we were going into Antwerp, and I went up and got to Harry Melville at A1 Echelon. And we got there, and we were on the edge of Antwerp, and Harry Melville said to me, "Jump in, we're going into Antwerp." I says, and it surprised me, because Harry Melville, he wasn't a man that stuck his neck out, you know. He was a very confident person, highly a good administrator. So he took his jeep, because I was not a jeep, and we went into Antwerp. Down this road into Antwerp. I don't know how far we went in, but we went into Antwerp, jumped into a hotel, had a drink, signed the books, and came back again. And I just always remember that was so unlike them. And that was probably the only time I ever really stuck my neck out myself, where they didn't have to stick it out. But there it was. And then the next thing, of course, was going into Antwerp. I don't remember much about that. Still no billets, by the way. If you're talking about billets, the regiment just slept where it was.
So that part of your job wasn't relevant then?
That's right.
So what's next?
I think it was about supplies of ammunition, petrol, diesel, food, and accoutrements.
Now what's the next thing you remember after that?
The next thing we came back out of Antwerp, wasn't there very long. We came out of Antwerp and went to a town. I can't remember. I think it was Ligny. L-E-I-G-L-E. It's a town in Belgium anyway. Rings a bell with me. L-E-I-G-L-E. Because if it's the town I'm thinking about, then we were slowing down a bit now because we were coming up to the Albert Canal, and there was billets, because I had billets. We had billets in Langley. We just took them. We just
And would you be part organising that?
Yes, slightly organising it there, and then it better later on.
Okay.
It was all, it was such a higgledy-piggledy thing there. And then after that, after this labour thing, the regiment was going over the Albert Canal and up into Holland. Because by that time they were getting ready for...
And what do you remember the advance into Holland?
Well, the entry into Holland, well, we, again, it was one of losing tanks. We lost a tank, a honey tank there, which I haven't mentioned before, but the Paddy comes into my recollection.
The what?
The Paddy. We had our own Paddy with us all the war, you know, with the regiment.
And what do you think of him?
Oh, well, if he weren't religious, he would have dropped into religion. He really was an absolute wonderful person.
What was his?
You've heard about him.
Do you remember his name?
Yeah, Captain Welsh, Oswald Welsh, dead, I can assure you. Came to one of our dinners here. Oswald Welsh, MC, I may tell you. He was absolutely, and he just didn't have any fear at all. Why he comes to my mind there was, we had to go up, one of the tanks had been hit up at a crossroads just over the Albert Canal, and it was one of our honeys, and we went up, and a young lad called Millen, who joined up with me, had been killed. He was half in and half out the tank by the time we got there, but he was dead, and we took things off. I took actually money off him that he had, because he had a load of money, and I eventually got it back to his people in Dundee. But Oswald just wanted to be there with him. And he was really always getting into trouble for being too far forward. Always wanting to be up with the tanks, you know. He was really a superb person. But that's the first time I've mentioned him, because that was one day he and I went up. He had his own truck, but he came with me that day. Nothing else I remember about that. We went up then, we went up on into out of Holland. The next thing I remember about in Holland is our friend Hutchison. I wasn't very happy with him at that particular moment.
What was the problem there?
Well, as we were travelling up as a regiment,
he was in charge of A squadron, wasn't it?
And A squadron were on the right flank going up, and they went down towards this canal business, and it was on the road to Aston. And the word came back that they'd got a bridge intact. And of course, this seemed to be a great thing. They'd got this bridge intact, and the colonel then was going to switch the regiment down to go in, because if the bridge was intact and you got through and got into Aston, we could come round further on the German flank. However, I'm afraid something happened there, and the bridge was blown up right in the very nose of Colonel Hutchison at Aston. And it is nose. People were unhappy about this, you see. Another friend of mine got the military medal there. He then got a GBS low at Aston. Big battle there. And the next thing was, it was decided they would build a bridge over that canal that night. So the engineers built this bridge, and it was because of the thing, they'd lost it. A squadron were to go across it first leg. And a chap called Bury, Lieutenant Bury, went across with the first troop. He took his troop across. Now, they crossed this bridge, and within 20 yards of crossing this bridge, they were involved with Germans who were trying to stop them getting across anyway. They were all, I think his two tanks were knocked out. Bully got right through, and he was eventually killed later on. But I think it was a complete disaster. But what annoyed me as a person was he took the scout car across. Now, I knew the scout cars were part of HQ squadron. He took the scout car across, and they were killed as well. And I thought, that was war. Then the next troop got across and went into Aston, A-S-T-E-N, and cleared Aston. I went into Aston very early with A.S. Long, and we did a lot of replenishing and sorting out in Aston. So that was another little thing from going up through there. Then we went up, travelled up that part of Holland, and we weren't in Eindhoven, we were on the edge of Eindhoven, and we went out to the right again, because we were getting near the Rhine, you see, and we went out there. Now remember, one time I went into a tank and fired a gun, the tanks were then firing shells, because they thought with supreme elevation they could fire into Germany. And I said, I'm going to have a shot at this, so I jumped in and fired the shot as well. And they were firing right over, like absolute elevation on the Sherman. And this is a war, you see, you do these things. And they were landing, they probably killed some worms in the Sherman. We're not going to shoot it anyway. So we went up there. The next place we were involved with was, I don't remember a town, but Eisenstein, Schellings a bell, Eisenstein. It's in Holland. And it's one of the towns where we were stationed again. And we just took over a little, there were empty houses all over the place. There was no question of civilians going out and us going in because there was nobody else. And we were stationed there. The regiment then moved up to a place just outside Eisenstein, and they had to send tanks out to a place called Little America. That's on the map, Little America. And we had to supply them. And that was another nightmare.
In what way?
Well, because it was so wet, and there was no place we could go off the roads, and there was so much mud. And to get the vehicles up, we took them up in 1500, to get the vehicles up to the tanks out there, we had to tow them up with a tank. The honey tanks towed us up. They just towed us up there and towed us back. And that was anything to tell. The Germans were coming across at night over the Rhine, and we were stationed there for some time in there. Now, as I recall again, I don't know how long this is, in days and weeks and whatnot, word came through that we were going to be equipped with Comets. So it must have been about then, equipped with Comets. And of course, the next thing was the Comets had didn't have a 75mm shell.
So this is when you went to Ypres?
This is when we went to Ypres, that's right. So I had to get, I went back to RASC, I remember clearly going back to RASC, and nobody would take any ammunition from me. So I dumped it. The whole bloody lot was dumped in not where we were far from where we were billeted.
Where did you dump it?
Well, what we did, and I told whoever was listening to me, we used the tank. We had a tank which had a thing, you know, that dropped its front and scooped the thing up, you know. As a special, we had one of these anyway. I have a picture of one.
A bulldozer tank.
Like that, you know, our bulldozer, that's right. So it had a bulldozer on the front. We used it sometimes for pushing. If a tank was blocking a road, the colonel would whip it up and push a tank off with it. You see, he just dropped his bulldozer. So I just scooped out great big holes and dumped all the stuff there because we were only taking 80 vehicles back 2 weeks anyhow. So that was it. And dumped all our stuff there, and then we started to go back to Ypres. Now, I had to go on ahead because I had to billet Ypres. Now, this is a proper billeting job.
So what do you remember of that?
I had to go into Ypres, and we liaised with the Burgermeister, or the mayor, whatever he was called, but the Burgermeister in Germany. I did that in Germany as well. But whatever we did, we went round, and we put so many people in this house, and so many people in this house, so many people in this house, and there was a great big school. We took over the school, because that was the mess hall and everything else. And we took over a place for the officers' mess as well. We took over a place for the sergeants' mess. And we built it in the mess because the information we got then was that we would be there for some time because the Comet tanks were coming in at Ostend, I think, which wasn't far away. And we were to pick them up and all the training was done. On the way to Ypres, of course, we dropped off the tanks that we did have and the vehicles. We kept some vehicles. We dropped most of the vehicles off in Brussels. What used to be, what was, I understand, where they held the Olympic Games. We dumped everything there. Now this must have been November, December.
December.
December, I thought it was. Because I remember it was December, and we were starting to plan for a Christmas day, and I set up the officer's mess. The colonel said I could set up the sergeant's mess and the officer's mess. Now you must remember something else. All during the way up, and all over there, I was able to claim allowances for people, officers. It was about a bottle and a half of spirits a month or something, you see. So I claimed all these, as well as doing all the other little jobs. This was pretty clean. So we were claiming these, and we had stuff to set up messes with anyway, you see. Because again, Colonel Scott refused. I was under no condition was I ever going to supply any spirits to anybody in the fighting forfer until he said so. And he said no, all the men he moved up through there. Some issues, he came once or twice or thrice. But no issue of this spirit allowance. So we set them up and got things set, and we were down. I picked up very nice billets. I picked some nice billets for myself, I may tell you, because I had the billets of everybody, you see. But by and large, it was good. And I got in with the family. I got a picture of them all, and I lived in their house not far away.
How did you get on with them?
Oh, great. I wrote to my mother, of course, because, as I say, another thing about this regiment, the squadron, particularly in length, not many of them were married. Remember I told you, we were called up 1920s, 1921s. Girls in these days were very much wanted to leave us, and marriage wasn't a problem. The ones that were married had problems with wives and problems with children. These things didn't affect us whatsoever. So I wrote to my mother. My mother used to send her coffee and things like that, and they used to stay at her little thing, but we were there. I can't remember how long, but I was there long enough to get my mother to write to her, and she did that. And then he gave us, I've got a fishing rod, and then never been back, of course. I never wanted to go back. But I've gone back to have that letter. But got on fine. The thing that attracted me at the Hard Village was, when I was checking them all, I went into her house, and she had a bathroom. Well, I used to look for a long bath. I'm not sure that. So you can understand what happened in that particular village. I said, that's mine, you see. But I also